Yeah.
Yo. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Ben Van Leer. Look at him there. He is a Ben, and he looks over there.
I even pointed to my hair.
Yeah. The problem is sometimes with rhymes, like, other words I know I can't say come to mind. So I go, he, and I got, I can't say that. So I, and then my.
And that's rhymes. Yeah. You just got to repeat it.
Yeah.
Damn it.
It happens all the time when rapping. I'm like, this is going to rhyme with the word that I can't say. Like, it's
Ben.
Alan, ben, Rowan, Ellie.
Ben. What are you doing here?
The day has finally come. The day has finally come. First question. Who's going to win when we rematch in jiu-jitsu? Who do you think is going to win when we have a rematch in jiu-jitsu, mother?
I mean, fucking me.
Well, who do you think is going to win?
Me?
I mean, this is great. This is the perfect setup for a fight. This is awful. This is perfect.
Think about it. It's the perfect setup for a fight.
Think about it. I've had all these years now to kind of just think about it and brew.
So, and I've been wasting my time training more jiu-jitsu.
And he's just been wasting his time learning these techniques.
Yeah.
And shit.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to come in there. Guys,
there's going to be a genuine live stream. Live stream with us? I'm going to live stream. We're going to sell tickets. Ben v. Rowan, fight to the death.
Ben v. Rowan on pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view.
Sunday.
Only on pay-per-view.
I can't wait for this
rematch. Rowan, we talked about this the other day. How the fuck are you going to win? You don't even know how to win.
I guess you...
Bro, it's just sheer willpower.
I just don't know your mentality. You'll just see red and bodies will start hitting the floor.
Your whole thing must be just, you got to choke him out. That's like you just choke him out, right?
Okay, here is the problem. I don't actually know what the criteria are to win.
Well, like, choking him out, that'd win, right? That's criteria.
Okay, to win an actual jiu-jitsu match, you can win on points. It depends on the rule set, to be honest. Jiu-jitsu is a mess. There's so many different rule sets, but the main kind of rule set is you can win on points, or you can get them to submit, like they tap out.
Oh, that's your only option.
Or you can choke them unconscious. No, there's no punching.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, if you want to have an MMA fight, we can do that, but I can punch you too.
No, you're bound by jiu-jitsu rules. Anyway, on to the rest of the podcast. We'll come back to this.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
That's happening. We're making this happen. There'll be a warm-up match with Adam and me just fighting in the middle to start to get everyone in the mood. And then
I think you guys should have a Jello wrestling match.
Jello wrestling match. Yeah. And give then the you guys come up for the want. Real yeah. thing. Well, people have been asking for it. The fans have been asking for it.
And my serious first question is, Ben, this is because you come from an acting background.
Yes.
And I'm going to go into the pretty cliche question to start with, which is, what initially inspired you to pursue acting, and how did you get started in the industry, Ben?
Money.
There it is. You knew it was going to be a big money spinner.
It was a guaranteed win.
Yeah.
Acting equals guaranteed win.
Yeah. In a weird way, the thing that inspired me to potentially become a professional actor was the allure of money, in a strange way.
Oh.
So, long story, but in high school, I basically had to take a drama class at one point. I was in the top class at school, and we got every semester we got given these different classes. We'd lose like a math, science, English class, and then they'd replace it with like, I can't even remember. One of them was creative writing. One of them was problem solving. I can't remember the others, but one of them, one semester was drama, and we got forced to take it. And I was like, oh, I actually quite like this. And so I started taking drama just classes at school, and I enjoyed it. And then my mum went to like a school reunion or something and met a casting director and was like, oh, my son likes to act. And then, that's not what my mum sounds like.
No, from now on, it's canon.
Yeah, my son likes to act, yes.
And my mum was like, oh, anyway, the lady got in touch with my mum like a couple of weeks later and was like, oh, we've got this audition. We're looking for teenagers. Is your son interested? And my mum asked me, it was for an ad. And she was like, oh, they've got this audition. Do you want to come and do this audition? I was like, no, not really. And she's like, well, if you get it, it's $3,000 or something. And to a 15-year-old, I was like,
I couldn't imagine that amount of money as a 15-year-old.
Like, I could retire.
You could retire. Legit. Look.
And so I went along to this audition, and I actually got a call back, and I got to like the final three or something. I didn't get it.
Oh, right.
But I got down to the final three, and I was like, oh, shit. It was the first time in my life I'd gone, oh, I could make money by being an actor. Holy shit. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized how much I enjoyed it.
We interrupt this program with a message from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions Manscaped, trusted by 10 million men worldwide.
This season, make sure to groom your carpets and the drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming.
Clear out that winter bush with the Manscaped Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers.
Stay with us. We've got a discount for you. Rowan, how have you found the Manscaped Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra?
My guy, I have found it like a smooth butter on my tum tum. Like, look at this.
You can't, oh, wow.
Yeah.
If only this was a visual medium. That's insane.
Their fifth generation trimmers feature two interchangeable next gen skin safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. What about you, Alan?
Well, let me tell you a little story here, Ron. In the past, I always feared grooming my nethers. It would always end with a cut, blood everywhere. It's a miracle I survived. Not anymore, not with Manscaped. And now, my junk, 3 inches bigger.
You know, I noticed that.
Yeah, I've been very proud about it showing around the office. With Manscaped, it also features dual LED spotlights to guide you through the darkest winter debris, and this bad boy is waterproof.
Spring cleaning doesn't just apply to the nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit, plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver.
Whether you're looking to craft your signature look or clean up that neckline, these are always the right tools for the job.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code VLDL at manscaped.com.
You heard that right. That's a whole 20% off with free shipping with the code VLDL at manscaped.com.
Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Now, let's get back to the podcast. But in a funny sort of way, it was actually in a money that made you go for the very first, like, the very spark was I could make $3,000 from an ad.
Yeah, well, and I mean, technically the very, like, I just enjoyed drama class and doing the acting and stuff. So if I hadn't enjoyed that, there's no way my mum would have suggested doing the thing in the first place. But yeah, and also because the ad was about some, it was some like tissue ad or something, like Kleenex or whatever. Yeah. And the ad was like this young dude and his girlfriend's going away or whatever. And I remember in the callback, she had to kiss you on the cheek. And the girl was super cute. I was 15.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, because I remember in the first audition, like I was just doing it by myself or whatever. So you didn't
money
get a
and
kiss.
Chicks.
Yeah.
I think you're not wrong.
Yeah. And I remember in the audition, I was like, oh, she'll fake it or something. But she actually kissed me on the cheek. And that's probably why I nearly got the ad, because I probably would have been like,
that's right, because I forget that you've told me about your early kind of life as romance life, and you were just like the most nervous nerdy little boy.
I we won't go into them, but I have some memories from high school where I look back on them now going like, Ben, she is into you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
I know the story you're talking about.
Same.
Being a 15, yeah. I'm like, this is cool. Like, I'm next to a girl. This is the best it could ever be.
Yeah. What else could we do?
Yeah. There's no way that a girl would actually be like into
properly.
Me.
No,
like,
no way. It was not even on my
girls aren't,
radar.
Well, girls don't even like, girls don't like, women don't like sex.
No.
So there's no way they'd want. But let alone have sex with me.
Yeah, I mean, one day I might persuade one of them to hang out with me for a while, maybe. But just the idea of it was just not on my radar.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so that was the thing that was the first kind of spark. It was
you thought in film girls might, they could pretend, they'd act interested in me, and that was good enough.
Yeah.
But really, it was just kind of, that audition was just like an opening to a world where I was like, I'd never even thought of becoming an actor. And then the more I did it, the more I realized how much I liked it. And then I ended up going to drama school and I've earned very little money. Yeah. That's the kind of hilarious part of me. I was like, I could make money out of this, and then just didn't make any money for the next 15
turns
years.
Turns out this is like one of the most unfinancially viable things I could have chosen.
Ridiculous.
What?
Yeah.
What were young Ben's hopes and dreams, and how have they changed?
They haven't changed a lot, to be honest. Yeah. Like, my goal as an actor was, like, I never wanted to be famous. I never really cared that much about being rich. I just wanted to be able to earn a living with acting and then be well known in the industry enough to get to work with great people.
Yeah.
That has never happened to me.
Ben.
Hang on. Hang on.
What the?
There were layers to that. First, like, and then I was like, hey, he's referring to us.
Peel sap, bitch.
Got him.
Got him.
Nah, like, so yeah, that was my goal. I remember being a fresh graduate. To be honest, by the end of drama school, I was overacting. I decided I was just going to get tattoos and become a writer.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But looking back on it, that was more just because I went straight from high school to drama school and I was just sick of being in an institution. Right, so I just wanted to get out into the world. And I was like, just let me at him. You know, I'm ready. This. And then I got out into the industry. I was like, oh,
I want to go back. Can you help me?
Oh, this is awful. But I remember being like, I'm not like Shorten Street is the famous soap opera in New Zealand. I was like, I'm not going to do Shorten Street. I'm going to focus more on movies. And then within 6 months, I was like, Shorten Street, can you please? Yeah. Anything? Anything?
I can absolutely relate to this attitude of a young actors who are just out of drama school who have like got so much hope and ambition and think that you've got that much control over your career.
Remembering that both of you, though, also did have a taste of immediate kind of success to validate this thought that you had as soon as you got out.
Ron and I have talked about this a bunch, but for me, it was a movie called The Water Horse.
Yeah.
It's like a kid's film.
Disney, right? Disney?
I don't know if it's Disney, but it was a big film.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's about the Loch Ness Monster. And I got that about, I think it was about 6 months out of drama school. I got that audition and got it.
Yeah.
And then like they flew me to Wellington for like costume fittings and stuff. And then they flew me to Wellington to film, put me up in a 5-star hotel. Oh. And I have a very vivid memory of being in this hotel at night, this big flash, like apartment essentially, and just looking in the bathroom mirror and just going, Ben, you've nailed it, mate.
This is it.
Because I was like, well, it's a staircase.
Yeah.
Like, I've got this role, so my next role is going to be even bigger and better.
Yeah.
I'm already in a movie. This is it for me.
They finally found me.
Yeah.
Because I had the same thought,
Oh, bro. Like, because, again, when you're in drama school, like, you spend 3 years with these 20 people.
Yeah.
You end up developing so much respect in a weird way for so many, not a weird way, but for so many of the people in your class. And you're like, fuck, guys. We're so good. And then you come out into the industry and you're like, guys, we're here. The class of 2003, we have arrived.
Yeah.
And then after a couple of years, you see, of course, every year there's a new batch of drama school students and no one gives a fuck. Like, no one cares at all. Like, anyway, so I got that role and I was in Wellington and I was like, this is it. And then after that,
nothing.
How long are we talking? Like, after Waterhorse. How long are we talking before your next thing?
I mean, what would, like, in like, some ways, that's the peak.
Yeah.
Not. But, like, after that.
But what's the next job after Waterhorse?
I don't know.
It was just, like, an ad or something?
It
or?
Probably would have been an ad, yeah. I think I might have actually got an ad before the Waterhorse. I feel like the very first thing I did.
Oh, man, so you've been straight from ad to movie.
Yeah. So I think, like, 4 months out of drama school, I got an ad or something, which, again, was good.
Yeah.
And then I got the Waterhorse. And then, after that, I would have got some ads sporadically.
Yeah.
But I just moved into theater pretty much, like, after a couple of years.
This is where you're making money. Theater is where, bro.
No.
But I remember, we've talked about this before, because I've got a very similar experience where I was a fresh graduate and I got this, my first ad, and it was going to pay me like $5,000 or something.
Was that the one with the spinny wheel?
Wheel of Fate. And then by luck, I also got my role in Legend of the Seeker. Within days of each other, and they flew me up from Wellington to Auckland, put me in a fancy hotel. I got driven to set, and I thought, this is how. First of all, this is how it is. This is when you get an editing role. And I remember thinking exactly this. I think I literally looked into the bathroom mirror and was like, thinking like, Rowan, you son of a bitch, you made it, mate. They finally found you.
Congratulations, me.
They finally found you.
And then the same reality check of kind of like big busy days and stuff, feeling like, oh, I'm so proud of myself. And then like nothing.
Yeah.
For like 6 months.
Just working. Nothing. Like I was working at a video store back when those were a thing.
Yeah.
There would have been a sense of like everyone who doubted me from now on
can eat shit. Because like, I finally can prove to them I've made it. And this will be constant and they will,
See, for me, I never really had the proving it to anyone else, but I was just like, this is, fuck, it's going to be so cool when I work with Tarantino. It's going to be so cool.
Do you know what? I can remember actually my small day player role in Legend of the Seeker. And then once that released, I kept expecting to be recognized.
Just as you walk down the street.
Walking down the street. I was so naive. Like, just thinking, like, I'm that guy on that one episode of Legend of Seeker who played that fucking role.
I can genuinely understand their mentality.
I kind of assumed people would see Waterhorse on my like CV or whatever, and casting directors would be like, wait. You were in The Water Horse? Holy fuck.
Shit.
Ben Van Leer is in the
room? I remember
room?
My mentality watching shows was just like, oh, everyone in this show is famous and successful. Yeah, like, that was just my first watching Stargate SG-1 or whatever. One soldier runs over and goes, we got to get over to the thing. I'm like, well, you've made it. Everyone's made it.
Again, it's one of those things where acting and film and TV is so glamorized and people become so famous.
Yeah.
By it. That when you're younger or even when you're not younger, when you just don't know how the industry works, you assume everyone on TV is rich and famous and
everybody.
That is not how it works. Like even other actors, like quite often, like if say you get 3 TV shows in a year, even if they're small roles, like you'll have another actor be like, man, you've been busy.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, I had that day in March. And then I had a week in June, and then I also had 3 days in September. So
killing it.
Almost 2 weeks of work throughout the year. So
I've been killing
cool.
it.
Pretty cool.
Was there, because there was such like a pivotal like mirror moment where you were like, I fucking made it.
Yeah.
Was there a pivotal, oh no, I haven't made it moment?
No, that, just a slow decline. Realization over months and months.
There wasn't another mirror where you're like, you useless piece of shit.
Nah. It was just... Like, it's so funny looking back on it. But it was just going to more auditions, getting none of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually after a couple of years, me and some friends got together and were like, so this is brutal. Shall we do some theater, I guess? Yeah, and then we read the play.
Sorry, were these a bunch of people from your class?
Right. And so we got together and read the play Trainspotting.
Good.
And we were like, fuck yeah, this is, because of course it's a book, but someone turned it into a play and we're like, this is awesome. We should put this on.
Yeah.
And then we looked into it and the rights were like 10 grand or something. And we're like, okay, we definitely can't do that.
Yeah.
let's write our own play.
Hey.
And then that kind of kicked off a massive chapter of my life where I like ran a theater company with some friends and we wrote like 5 or 6 like full length plays.
Yeah. I don't think I have any, you ran a theater company.
What? Rant. Like that's one of those things that
sounds
way
glamorous,
more legit,
right? So this is right. If
it's me and 2 of my mates putting on plays at the basement or in these little black box theaters,
right,
for no money,
like, right. Okay,
again, kind of similar thing. Like the first play we did, we ended up getting funding for it, and then we put on another play. I got funding for that, and we're like, okay, and then did not get funding ever again, and had to kind of operate on the smell of an oily rag.
Theater company, huh?
They're fucking brutal, dude. Like in 2011 was our last year. We did 3 full-length plays that we wrote ourselves, that we put together, that we funded and directed and produced and put them on. So much work. And we ended the year, we did the budgets and like, all right, cool. We all owe $700 each.
That was how much money we made. Was we owe?
We had to pay $700 out of pocket.
So you were at $2,100 is what you earned. You're negative.
Yeah. I didn't have a full time job at that point. I was already like my partner Haley was basically supporting me at that point and to free me up.
That's right.
Which was like,
it was for your benefit. She was doing it for kind of for you. Or like,
well, I mean, she was just
working anyway. But she was okay with you not working.
She had persuaded me to. I mean, there's so many stories I'm getting all jumbled up, but she had persuaded me to leave my shitty video store job at one point.
Haley was just like, look, I want you to have the freedom to just really pursue this.
Yeah. And if she hadn't done that, who knows where I'd be.
Yeah, man.
And so I owe a lot to her.
Yeah.
Let's get to the what they really want to know, mate.
Yeah, enough talking shit.
Not interested about your fucking history, mate. How did you become a part of Viva La Dirt League?
Destiny.
How did it begin? How did you come to know us?
Okay, well, it started with you.
Rowan Bitchman.
Rowan and I sold wine together, wine over the phone together.
Best time of my life.
Best time of my life.
Wow. No, that hurts.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, ouch. Wow, ouch. Okay. Cool. We worked for a place called the New Zealand Wine Society. It was a call center. People could kind of join this club and we'd call them once a month and try and sell them wine. When we started working there, it was just the place where actors and musicians went to work because it was free wine, but also very flexible hours, reasonable pay. And so because everyone there was an actor or a musician or whatever, well, most of the people there were those kinds of people. We're all poor, desperate for money. And so if you needed people to cover your shifts, it was pretty easy to find them. Blah, blah, blah. And so Rowan and I were part of the same training group, I think. We got hired at the same time. And that's where we first met each other. But that was just kind of like, oh,
hey, man. Sure. We got on okay.
We got on fine. But we didn't like hang out or anything. It was just kind of whatever.
Yeah.
And we worked there for a couple of years and then
I would love to see like just a photo or something of like your crew. You know,
I'd love to just see a little fly on the wall snippet of how well we knew each other. If it would be like, hey man, like, hey, or which is a head nod.
I remember how well we know each other. Yeah,
I remember us having conversations and talking, but not like best mates. Just kind of hanging.
How's your weekend? Yeah,
yeah, cool.
Anyway, back to it.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that's how I met Rowan. Then we both left that job or whatever. And then we would just bump into each other at auditions every so often because we're pretty much the same kind of type, rough, same age, tall, white dudes.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing the first early episodes of Bored on Facebook. You shared it on Facebook.
Yeah.
So you saw this before you acted with us?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I think the first episode I saw was the first episode of Bored.
Oh,
like,
shit. OG.
Taki running off, you're the manager.
Yeah. The StarCraft versus Dota episode. Yeah, yeah. And I think you had a few episodes out at that point, but that was the first one that I watched. And it's one of those things when you're friends with a lot of young actors, they're all making shitty short films and web series, and they're all awful. And I remember Rowan posted it on Facebook, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, I'll have a look.
Yeah.
And I clicked play, and I was like, oh. Oh, shit, Rowan's actually pretty good. And I saw it, and I was like, because you did the whole thing of the eloquent blah, blah, blah. And then you go out and you do basically almost like your first mumble fade in a way.
Kind of.
Where you're like, hey, fucking Dota. Dota just sucks. And you ran off and you wrote and you can't keep it. And I was like, holy shit, that was actually pretty good. And then I think I watched a couple more episodes and I was like, shit. And I sent Rowan a message. I could probably find it in our message history if I scrolled back far enough. And I was like, hey, man. I just wanted to say I saw a board and I thought it was really fucking good, man. It's good job. Like, keep going. And because I was a desperate out of work actor, I was like, and obligatory, if you need an actor, hit me up.
Yeah.
Like, and Rowan was just like, yeah, sure, fucking thanks, whatever.
I would have been like, oh, like
probably not.
Probably not.
Like, yeah.
I would have been thinking, probably not, man. Like, but I would have said like, oh, absolutely, man. Crazy.
Gave me the like, yeah, thanks, man. And yeah, for sure. And I knew. I'm like, yep, okay. Yep. I mean, I've done my thing, whatever. And then years went by. And then Rowan and I.
Years?
Fuck. Years, man. Because
between your episode and the first episode. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
What episode were you in? Do you know the actual number? Like 20-something?
Ellie, help us out here. I think it's 30-something.
30-something. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I suppose it's after. Speed
because,
we
like, things, we worked together at the Wine Society in, like, 2008.
Yeah.
And then that would have been, like, what was the first board episode? Like, 2012 or something? 2013?
Probably. 2012 or 13?
Yeah,
12,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe 12.
Something like that. And then Rowan and I both got cast in the same show.
Yeah.
Which was an Amazon show called American Playboy, which is about Hugh Hefner. I had a 10 bigger ago. Role.
Yeah, well, it's all, you, the role's where you make it, mate.
And you made a fucking meal of yours, didn't you? Because you... didn't you, like, you had one big scene.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, we need you to film on this date. And you were like, ah, I could kind of do that, but... No.
Was it? It would be a real nuisance, but I was like... But for some reason, I decided that was when I was going to put my foot down.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, no, I can't do it, actually. I can't do that date. I could have moved things and made it work.
Yeah.
And so
you prioritized.
I don't know what I was thinking. Like, my big scene, I was like, no, sorry, I actually can't. no, I can't do that date. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, you're going to have to. Because
this is a big scene.
This is a big scene. So you're going to have to work around me. And they were like, okay, sweet. Well, we'll get back to you on that one. And then they obviously just went, oh, so we'll just cut the scene out. And I was like, yeah.
I love how much you played yourself.
I played myself. And I was like, waiting for them to get back to me and go, hey, man, can you do this date instead? But instead, they were like, sweet, we'll just cut that out.
Oh, my God.
And you're like, I could have done it.
Ages actually learning those lines, because it was quite a big scene. And, oh, man, I wish I. Oh, why did I do that?
Fucking hilarious. Anyway, I still remember the day, like, walking out and seeing you sitting there. I was like, oh, fuck, Rowan, what's up, man? And you were wearing a Viva shirt. And then, but it wasn't until the cast and crew after party, like the wrap party.
Yeah.
Which I very rarely go to these days, but I went along because I was like, yeah, who knows who I'll see? I'll get network. And then that's when I bumped into Rowan again.
And you did network.
And I did network.
With a very influential person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lucky you went.
And I remember going, so, like, what's going on with the YouTube channel? And you were like, well, it's actually going really good because you guys had just started NPC Man.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, yeah, we've started the show and it's really taken off. And I was like, oh, what is it? And you're like, yeah, it's about an NPC, but he's kind of self-aware. He's like a background NPC. And it was one of those things where I heard it and I was like, well, that's a fucking genius idea. Holy shit. That's a really good idea. Fuck.
Fuck, I wish I thought of that.
Yeah. Fuck this prick. God damn it. And then we also found out we were both playing Overwatch.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, oh, you play Overwatch. I play Overwatch. We should fucking
and we still play Overwatch
some
sometimes.
Overwatch together. And then we started playing Overwatch together. And then, and like every so often you'd be like, yeah, or one of, I'm sure I probably was like, yeah, if you ever need an actor, you know, fucking, and you were like, yeah, put in.
Probably not, but.
Sure, no, put in. Probably not, Ben, but sure. Because also,
yeah, sure, maybe,
at this point, you didn't really know who I am.
No.
And so you eventually did ask me along to a board episode. Like, I feel like.
I would have gone, if we were looking for like a boring kind of like straight.
Just regular
just a
old
dude.
Joe.
Like a dude.
Just a decent looking old like guy.
Just a guy.
Yeah.
That was it, basically. Like you invited me along to that one shoot.
Because we were literally like, hey, we need for the skit, we need a straight guy to play a nice normal customer.
Normal customer.
I've got a friend, Ben, who's actually been fucking pestering me.
he sounds fine.
So should we get him? We'll throw him a bone. Like
sure, I don't give a
fuck.
He'd
actually be perfect for this because he's a great just straight.
Great straight
man.
Guy. Okay, straight cool,
man,
cool, cool.
Just a regular
great.
Average dude.
Cool. Let's get him on this one and then just forget
then,
about
never
him.
Again. Yeah, and then he'll stop pestering me.
He'll be great.
Yeah. And then I went along and we filmed it and I could feel the chemistry between you and I. Like when we did that scene, I was like, oh, because after a while as an actor, like when I did my theater company thing with two of my good mates from drama school. Well, a few of them, but it's kind of a few people fell off and whatever. And we had a really good chemistry together creatively. Like we worked together really well, but then we all just got burnt out and I was like, right, I'm just going to go find some other people to work with.
Yeah.
And I went out to the industry and I was like, here I am. You're all fucking idiots. Oh no. Like it's so hard to just find people that you have good creative chemistry with. It just is, it's hard.
Yeah, dude, genuinely.
And so, I felt that when we worked together. And
there
also,
wouldn't have been a script. I don't think. It would have just been like, so just come to the door and you just say some stuff and I'll say some stuff and you say some stuff and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. And we just bounced off each other well. And I also found it so refreshing that you got, like, because again, it's so crazy looking where we are now in our studio. Because I turned up and it was just you three, like you two and then Adam, holding a camera. And just with a shotgun mic on it, and you just like point it, go, go. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, now you do me. Like, And we did, like I said, I did one take of my side, and they're like, sweet, moving on. I'm like, what? What do you mean? What?
It was pretty good to me.
Yeah, it was
pretty good to you.
Yeah. And I could just do whatever I want. And I did my high pitched scream, and you guys were like, yep, great, moving on. Yeah. It's like, okay. And it took 2 hours. And then, like you say, it got like 35,000 views and I was like, holy shit. I really, really saw the potential of Viva.
Yeah.
And I felt the chemistry and I was basically like, right, I'm going to infiltrate this group. Yeah. Like I am
going to
force myself in and I'm making this a thing.
Yeah.
And also on that first episode, we recorded it and we had intended for me to just be the straight guy, and for Rowan to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
But the comments were like, oh, yeah, I hate it when people do that. Those customers.
Like you were the bad guy.
Yeah. They're always demanding to do this, that, and the other thing. And it suddenly, it made me realize, I was like, because I've spent years working in retail and customer service, I was like, oh yeah, I do hate customers. Like everyone who works in a shop fucking hates the customers. And that's and that's not something you guys had really explored yet. Yeah. It was always just the board staff were weird, or weird Alan and Rowan interactions. And so I remember, because I got into the point in my acting life where I was like, you have to grab the bull by the horn sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, there had been a few times when I'd done theater auditions and finished the audition and then sent the director an email just going, hey man, I really want to do this.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference. Like, yeah. And so I remember sending you guys an email just going, hey, I really enjoyed working with you. I feel like we have good chemistry. Also, I noticed that the comments were blah, blah, blah. So I've come up with some ideas for
Write like full scripts?
I wrote out, not full scripts with no one.
No, right.
But I wrote out, I think it was like 2 pages of ideas, like just little kind of.
Yeah.
And we did a bunch of them.
Yeah.
We did a bunch of them, yeah. Because I sent them through and I was like, there was no price tag, must be free. Because again, I used to work in a department store and people would come up with a fucking towel or something. And I'm like, oh, there's no price tag. And they're like, no price tag, must be free. And you're like, oh, I want to shoot myself.
I remember like genuinely appreciating these ideas. And it was without that follow up email and these ideas, who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
It probably would have been a one time thing.
Yeah. Or maybe you, because Rowan and I were still hanging out, so maybe you would have got me back.
Oh, yeah.
For doing
I'm sure
something,
we would have got you back eventually. But maybe we wouldn't have pivoted your role into being this.
No, because who knows? I still remember we were doing the no price tag must be free video.
Yeah.
And it was me and Adam, and then Rowan, you were filming. And I went up and I did my thing. And I remember you going, cut, and going, you were like, fuck, you're pretty good at being an asshole. Like I could see the cogs kind of turning, like, oh, Ben isn't just a straight man.
Straight guy.
Because I get it. Like when you, this, like out in the industry, I still am.
Yeah.
Just, I get so many auditions for the nice guy neighbor, just boring fucking, my name's Gavin, like whatever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until that I got to let loose a little bit. You were like, oh.
Holy shit.
Even I saw you kind of, no, in the first skit you did with the return of the laptop, you didn't really get to unleash. You were just, more orchestra. And so this was the first time I was going, seeing you fucking go, right, kind of like, unleash, here we go, fucking.
Yeah, exactly.
No, price tag.
No.
And I was like, and yeah, I remember kind of going like, oh.
Ah.
That's not what I expected.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And then kind of the rest is history in some ways.
That was kind of, pretty much cemented that core cast character.
Yeah, kind of. And again, no one was getting paid back then.
Yeah.
You guys all had full-time jobs, or you had a part-time job.
Yeah.
67 is your first episode. Episode 67.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What's your favorite episode skit that you've done?
One of my favorites. My go-to answer for this was always, you lick it, you keep it. I think that's still one of my favorites.
Classic.
It's a classic. It's a banger. But then also, I love full service as well.
Oh, yeah.
The wild card, the restaurant.
Being puppeted.
Yeah.
Because I wrote that one as well.
Yeah.
And that one just, that's one of those ones where I wrote it, I had a kind of vision for it, and it just came out pretty much exactly how I wanted.
Amazing.
And so I've always loved that episode.
What's one of your favorite characters to play?
I think I enjoy Bored Ben.
Yeah.
The bit. It's one of those weird things where sometimes I have conversations with fans where, like, I see him. And that it's very sitcom-y in that it just resets every time. Like, I don't really see him as the same character every time, although I kind of do.
Yeah.
It's this weird, like,
it's
kind of, he's kind of the same dude every time, but he's kind of not, and it kind of progresses, but it never does. It's this weird thing.
He
but
serves that kind of role, and we don't want to get too much.
Well, that's the thing, you don't want to ever, you know, because if he has too much memory, he'll eventually stop coming.
You just want to let him in the store.
We've allowed enough memory for Alan to go, oh, fuck, when he
turns up. Here he is, goddammit. But I'm not going to.
It's kind of the opposite with Hamish's character. Like, why the fuck? Does this keep
Hamish needs to find a different provider, like a different retail store.
And how many keyboards does that do? Oh,
so many. Maybe he's a rager. He rages.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I enjoy, honestly, one of the things I love about Viva is the variety of characters I get to play. Yeah. Because, and I've said this before, like, you could take any day of Viva filming, and it's the most interesting thing I've done in my career, basically, because most of the roles I get offered outside of Viva are just these boring.
That's so cool to hear, man.
Yeah.
And tying it back to one of your original questions, like, where I've ended up with Viva is kind of beyond my wildest dreams in some ways. Like, because working as a young fucking unemployed actor, I had, and this wasn't my invention, it was something I picked up somewhere, but there were three things that you could have: good work, good people, and good pay. And I always wanted at least two of those things. So if it's good work with good people, I'd do it without much money.
Yeah.
If it's good work and good pay, I'd do it even if the people are a bit shit, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But with Viva, I have those three. I have pay that I'm happy with. I've working with some of my best mates, and I am doing work that I like.
Yeah.
Plus, we have millions of fans around the world. Plus, I've always been into video games and sketch comedy. And
there's the dream of where it's going to get. We have no idea where it's going to go.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
There's excitement.
I had a realization the other day that because, you know, it's the human condition. You just get complacent. You just get used to what you have. But I had, every so often I hang out with other actors again, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Mm. That's the world I'm missing out on. Just this brutal, awful, just world of rejection.
Yeah.
Working a shitty job you hate.
Rejection and just waiting.
And chasing this dream. Waiting. And I guess chasing the dream, it would be a dream that would start becoming something you really feel quite like anger towards. You know?
Oh, yeah,
like
you'd
start, what's the term?
Bitter.
Bitter, thank you. You'd be very, very bitter about this dream and this career you've chosen.
I see it all the time. Ironically, with veteran actors who work a lot in New Zealand, they get really bitter and twisted about it because they're just doing jobs that they don't like, and it's never enough money, never enough time, and people get really bitter.
Yeah.
And so the other day I realized it's like I probably have the best job I can get in New Zealand. Like for me, like I get to act in ways that I like. I have so much creative freedom. I get to write. And then the way it's incorporated, my even drawing, that was one of my other passions, incorporated into the streaming and stuff. Like it really has, like, it's better than I could have ever imagined in some ways.
That's so fucking cool.
That's cool.
It's pretty cool. And I have to consciously remind myself of that.
You're really good at that. I really appreciate having you on set sometimes because you do or often take moments, like whether you intend to or not, of just going like, fucking hell. I just had another sobering moment appreciating what this is.
Yeah, dude.
And that definitely reminds me when I'm on set as well. I was like, oh, yeah, this is all pretty good.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I always forget. I'm kind of like, man, it's busy and life's hard. But that's, some people would love that.
Oh, bro.
Oh, dude. Like, any actor.
Most people would like, God, like, I wish I could say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
I'm busy and my life is hard.
Yeah, exactly. There was one day of NBC Man where I played the Death Knight, and then I played the outrageous musician thing with Adam, and then I played Tinfoil
Hatman.
Like, all in one day.
Yeah.
And like, or the fucking, the absurd muggers skit where we mugged ourselves playing Vikings. And I couldn't do a Viking accent, so I did a weird half-German accent. Like, yeah, I am the Viking. Like, mugging myself. I'm like, this would be far and away the most interesting thing I've ever done in my career.
Yeah.
And it's like the second most interesting thing I'm doing today.
Today.
Like, yeah. So I feel very, very lucky to be part of Viva. And, you know, I've put in a lot of work and I, you know, actively made it happen, but still.
Well, we are very lucky to have you. Thank you for all of your work. And
you're welcome.
One of my questions was, what do you do fucking here?
What exactly do you do?
When people know you as an actor, but what else do you do?
I'm also the head writer.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, you're the head writer.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And basically what that means is I send emails about writing rooms and stuff.
Hey, you coordinate the shit out of that writer's room.
Yeah. No, but it's great. Like, because when I first started, it was all just improvised, basically. Yeah. Like, we'd have a rough outline. I'll never forget the day I turned up to board. And Alan, you were like, oh, yeah, we do have a script for this one. I was like, oh, do we? And you're like, yeah, you had your laptop and you showed it to me. And it was just a blank document with one line. And it just said, Ben does something funny. And I
was like, man, I'm hilarious.
Cool, man. Let's do that then. But no, now we write scripts and stuff. And Yeah, I'm the person who's kind of
wrangling it.
Wrangling it.
As well as writing a lot of the
scripts. I write a lot of the scripts, and along with Britt, who you guys might know from being an actor as well. Mm-hmm, She's one of our fantastic writers. And then Gabe, and then a few other people as well. And we all get together, we brainstorm the ideas, and we go away, write the scripts, and then review them and give notes and all that kind of stuff.
Fuck yeah, boy.
Now, we are running out of time, and I've got a whole lot of questions about delving into personal, like, mental health and stuff, but I don't think we've got time.
I think this is part one, and we have to get Ben back for part two.
Shit dog. There's just too much
Ben. One podcast.
Last question. What advice would you give to aspiring actors? Young aspiring actors.
The advice I would give to young actors is get really good.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds almost silly to say, but so often I see actors and I talk to actors and you hear stuff online and it's all about networking or get this headshot or go to this course or I don't know. There's so much stuff around that's almost like these little tips and tricks to get success. But really, how you get successful is you get really fucking good. And that's, people take that as written. They're like, I'll do that.
I'll obviously
but
do
what
that.
Else?
Yeah.
Or they'll go like, I've got that sorted. I'm really good. What else do I need to do?
Yeah.
It's like
they just haven't
nothing,
found me yet.
Man.
They just haven't
found me yet.
Yeah.
And while there might be some truth to that, and there are obviously things you can do, networking and just going out and finding work and all that kind of stuff that really helps. But like I used to do a lot of work in casting as well, like running auditions and being a reader, like being the person behind the camera while people audition. And when you do that, it really becomes clear that all that matters is that you're really good.
Yeah.
Because there is most of your life as an actor is outside your control.
Mm-hmm.
Like you.
Unless you start a YouTube channel. A YouTube. I like, in all honesty. Start a YouTube channel and do your own work.
Making your own work is a big one, and that's a good way to get really good.
Yeah.
But so often you'd see actors audition and they're either, like, you just realize how much is outside your control. Like, so much of it is just down to your look, your vibe, just things that you just do not control.
Yeah.
The only thing you can control in some ways is getting as good as you possibly can. And so many people overlook that and think it's a lot easier than it is, and it's not. Like, it's so tempting as an actor to go into an audition. I used to be this guy, and you'd be like, I'm going to make a really interesting choice. Mm. Like, I know what everyone else is going to do with the script. I'm going to make a different choice to stand out. And there is some logic to that, but really, again, when you watch enough auditions, you realize what's interesting is someone doing really good work.
Mm.
Like, that's interesting, and it's so much harder than you think it is. Like, you think you're good, you're not as good as you think you are.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Like, and it's so easy as an actor to make excuses for yourself. I used to be like, thing is, I'm just too tall. That's why I'm not getting these roles. I'm just too tall. And then I met a guy called Matt Whelan, who is in Viva, works constantly in the industry, and is significantly taller than I am. And I was like, fuck. It's not that I'm too tall at all. Fuck. It's just that I wasn't good enough, or I wasn't in the right place.
Matt Whelan back in.
We really played
a therapist in a very old.
He's been in two skits. Hey? Yeah. He was in the Bronze League video.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And then one board.
He's a really lovely dude. A really great actor.
How long should someone pursue acting and not get work before they give up?
Fuck, this is.
Dude, that's a big question.
It's hard, like, legit, because everyone says, no, you just keep going. You'll make it one day. You're special.
And then you see
it's so hard, dude. Because, like, one of my favorite sayings, I love little sayings that manage to kind of encapsulate stuff. And one of my favorites is, follow your dreams, just don't follow them off a cliff.
I got that one from you, and I love that. So.
Yeah, because I know some, it's so hard, though, but I know some actors who follow their dreams off a cliff.
Yeah.
Like, they stuck with it despite the universe pretty clearly saying it's not going to happen.
It's not going to work out.
And now they're 50 or 60. And in some ways, it's kind of like, weirdly, it's like being a boxer. The worst thing you can be as a boxer is pretty good.
Yeah.
Because if you're not like championship level, you will be able to make a living as a boxer, but you'll never make the big money and you'll take all the brain damage. Like, so you either want to be really, really, really good or bad enough that you find out pretty quickly that you're just bad and you should stop.
Yeah, wow.
But if you're good enough to keep going, you'll keep going and you'll end up having a horrible time.
That's a great metaphor.
It's kind of the same as an actor. Like, I know so many actors who have had enough success, got enough plays, little bit parts in TV shows to keep going. But like, I remember talking to an actor in an audition room. He was in his mid to late 50s, I think. He'd just come back from doing a play down the line in Christchurch or whatever. And he was like, yeah, now I'm staying on my friend's couch because they have to find another flat to rent because they'd never earned enough money to buy a house or anything. And so he's mid to late 50s, flat hunting, like trying to find flatmates to live with. And he's like, I don't want to move in with some 20-something-year-olds and they don't want me to live with them either. And then other people my age mostly have houses and stuff. So I'm just kind of homeless at the moment, essentially.
Fuck.
And it's like, fuck, that's the reality for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Or people still working in call centers or whatever when they're 50 or 60. Like, it's, but then
fucked.
The it's
fucked,
so fun.
Man.
It's, you're like a professional lottery player. Yeah. It's so hard, man. And then the really hard bit is that some people, because like I said, so much of it is down to your look and your vibe. You might have a vibe that will really pay off when you're 50.
Yeah.
You might have a really,
like Morgan
you might
Freeman.
Be, yeah. Brent, you might be Brendan really good Gleason, at being like CEO roles or something. You might have this certain gravitas, but when you're 20, it just doesn't match. It's this weird, like what? Who are you?
So there are
like
some people that should just hold in there.
But then it's like, but what are you going to do for 20 years? Like, I kind of got told that when I was in my 20s because I had kind of that. Like, I look back on footage of me, I'm like, yeah, there's something not quite. I don't know. I was super baby faced, but like 6'4". I don't know. It just didn't work. Like, and I had casting directors go, I reckon in your 30s and 40s, you're going to do really well. I'm so I just hang out for 20 years. Like, what do I do? Like, so it's a really hard thing, but there's no easy answer because you, in order to get success, you have to keep going. But
so it sounds like the best thing is to actually just be really good at acting.
Just be really good at acting.
There it is. There like, it is.
That's the takeaway. That
be really good at acting, and then you'll get lots of acting work.
It's really hard. Because the other thing, I know actors who are really good who don't get work.
Yeah.
Because of just the brutal nature of the industry. They might not be attractive.
Is that
or
Bo
whatever.
Burnham advice? Just give up. Is that like, just give up. Just don't.
Yeah, there was a Bo Burnham thing where he like, I think it was on Conan or something.
Yeah.
He was like, what advice would you give? He's like, give up.
Give up.
He's like, it's like I won the lottery, and I'm saying to everyone, go play the lottery.
Liquidate all your assets and buy lottery tickets.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
It's, but it's the same with any creative endeavor, trying to be a musician, trying to be a painter, trying to be a writer,
Absolutely.
Trying to be a, the only way you'll succeed is by trying really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's not a guarantee of success.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a brutal, brutal industry. And you, so you kind of have to love it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, well, I say that, but then sometimes people love it too much and then it puts so much pressure on them that they just can't
not
operate.
It.
Whereas other people don't love it that much and it gives them a kind of freedom and looseness to move because you can care too much. Like there's another quote I heard the other day from Oscar Wilde, I think it was, and it was, some things are too important to take seriously. And I believe acting is kind of like that. And I've long held that as an actor, like my best acting is when I don't care too much. Because if I care too much, I just strangle it and smother it. You need a bit of looseness.
I find that whenever the camera's on me, I operate at 70 to 80%. And as soon as the camera's on the other person, I'm behind the camera just giving the off lines, back to 100.
Oh, bro. I learned that being a reader for auditions. I was like, I'm doing my best work off camera.
Yeah.
What the
It's really frustrating.
And I realize this because every acting tutor I've ever had has told me this. Like, if you want to be a good actor, make the other person good. Like, focus on them, not yourself.
Yeah.
But in an audition, it's so easy to just focus on yourself.
Totally.
It's so much better to focus on the other person. And
final question is like, final question is just reiterating, who do you think will win in a match when we rematch in Jiu-Jitsu?
Me.
Bro.
Man, like, how are you going to win?
Think about it. Look at this. You seen that shit?
Oh, there's something there.
Like, I, 4 years ago, when I was a white belt, I beat you, and I was 10 kilos less than I am now.
But I wasn't this, like, I wasn't fucking this determined.
He wasn't
like,
this determined.
You're not taking into account how determined I am.
Okay, how are you going to win?
Wrap us out, dog. Yo.
Yo. Yo.
We got Ben in the studio. He's saying some things. He thinks he can beat me in jiu-jitsu. I don't know about that because I like to... Ben, he can't, he was acting like a fool in the dip.
It's like Harry Mack is in the studio.
Roll win. Roland.
Yeah.
Oh. You're the man, Roland.
You're the man, Roland.
That's a rap.
That's not really a rap. That was that was you making words. Noise for yeah.
That was some words.
Acting and jiu-jitsu all into one. Everybody likes to eat a sesame bun. I like to have some sesame fun, and then I like to get my thing and shoot my gun.
That was pretty. That was that, like three rhymed. Or four words that rhymed.
Yeah,
that was pretty good. It was nonsensical, but pretty good.
Nonsensical. Nice. Sesame bun.
All right. See you next time.
See you for part two of Ben.
Part two.